Good morning. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. This is Senior Chief Rob Burrows, Director for the Northern California Veterans Museum and Heritage Center. And I would like to just invite you and welcome you to the program this morning. We're going to have a great guest that's going to be talking about some really wonderful things that we're doing here in our community and honoring our veterans. And if you have not gone outside this morning, when I was coming in, the sun was coming up, and the mountains were just absolutely purple. They were just absolutely gorgeous. Purple Mountains Majesty in the Northern California area. And the valley right now, if you haven't had a chance to go out there and look, is crowned with snow. Every one of those mountains out there is snow-capped. The valley is clear as a bell. The sky is beautiful, and the mountains are just shining like kind of like icebergs. Mount Shasta is like an iceberg on the horizon. Just absolutely gorgeous. We are so fortunate to live here in Northern California. We are truly blessed. And if you haven't had a chance to get out there since Thursday when the sun started shining, I'd encourage you to get out there and enjoy the cool, crisp air. It'll be a little bit warmer this afternoon. I think yesterday was about 72 degrees. It was just an absolutely gorgeous day. And so, once again, we are blessed to live here in Northern California and to be able to enjoy such a beautiful atmosphere and a wonderful place to live. We've been working with Battlefield Expressions PTSD Art Therapy. I'd like to go ahead and talk to you a little bit more about that. Battlefield Expressions PTSD Art Therapy is the program that we've developed with the Northern California Veterans Museum and Homeward Bound Military Family Support Services. And once again, if you hadn't heard, we received a grant from Cal Arts, California Arts Council, and it is for veterans who are sheltering in place. We actually put in for the grant back in 2019 because we have so many veterans that already shelter in place that are in need of PTSD support, and also just letting them know that we care. There's a program available for them. And so when COVID-19 came along, we were already in that mindset to help those that were by themselves and that were struggling. And so we were a recipient of that grant, and now we have purchased art supplies and art kits for up to 200 veterans and their families. This program is not just for the veteran, male and female. It's also for the family members or for a veteran spouse or children and or veterans widows who are looking to get out and be involved because there's so many that are sheltered right now and they can't go anywhere and they can't do anything. And so we just think that this is a wonderful opportunity for us to continue to support and help our veterans here in Northern California, encompass all of Northern California, all of the counties here in Northern California. We will have art classes that will be available to those that are in the program at no cost. They will be held at the firehouse down in Cottonwood. And we have instructors that we met with this last week, qualified instructors that will be volunteering their time to be there and to be a part of the program. And you don't have to be an expert artist. And you don't have to be a beginning artist. This program is for anybody that is a veteran or a family of a veteran that wants to be involved, that wants to be able to learn something else. We've got so many veterans that are like, well, I don't really paint. Well, that's okay. You don't want to paint, that's fine. Maybe this program isn't for you. But if you're out there and you want to be a part of this program, we invite you to be part of the program. And we're going to be working with the Veterans Home also, working with the elderly veterans and the senior veterans that are out there at the home. Right now, they're still on lockdown. I talked to the advancement person out there that takes care of the coordination of the different programs that come in. And so they're still on lockdown from the feds in the state of California. As soon as we get the opportunity to get out there with our instructors, we'll be teaching those elderly veterans that are there too and supplying them with our kits. And that's kind of the neat part about it is that you can be a part of the program. You don't have to spend any money. If it works for you, great. Then you can go ahead and advance yourself or whatever it takes. And if it doesn't, if it doesn't work for you, then that's fine. Then you've dabbled with painting. You've worked a little bit with it. You've met some other veterans. You've networked a little bit. You've had an opportunity to get out and be with like-minded people. And there's so many times with the veterans, you know, depending upon where you were and where you served and what took place, you don't really want to talk to anybody. You don't really want to rub elbows with anybody else. Because so many times when you talk to people or you share certain experiences with them, it gets thrown right back in your face. I've learned that many times working with the museum and with my own duty, especially serving in Iraq, two combat tours. Certain people have certain concepts, and they're not afraid to pop it right back in your face. And so you become very guarded. You become very careful who you talk to. You become very careful of how you express yourself in certain individuals and things like that. And so being in a program where you're with other like-minded veterans, and it's an accepting venue where you're invited in to be a part of it. Because when you're sharing and you're starting to paint and you're talking to other veterans and things like that about what's taking place, it opens up some of those wounds. The wounds that never heal, that you've hidden away, that are maybe part of an attitude or part of the hurt or part of the pain. We come back from the war zone, and it's kind of like your psyche is kind of like a filing cabinet. And you shove all those memories and all those feelings and all those photos in your mind into those filing cabinets. And you know they're there. And if you have the opportunity, every now and then you might open one of those up and explore what's in that particular drawer of your life. But sometimes the filing cabinet tips over and all the drawers open at once. And when they do, it is overwhelming because the memories flood back, the pictures flood back, the smells flood back, the concepts of where you were and what took place, all those things flood back into your life. And that's when it's so difficult to try to control that PTSD or to control those emotions. And sometimes those come out in yelling or screaming or anger or depression. It has many manifolded areas of where that PTSD comes out. And so with this program, our hope is that we can go ahead and work with these individuals who have seen and done certain things or have had experiences, that they can go ahead and translate some of those pains onto a canvas and to be able to share some of those memories in a positive way and to be able to get those pains and those sufferings and those nightmares and things onto a canvas and to be able to express themselves. It doesn't have to be about the war as far as pictures and things like that. Sometimes it might just be a concept of pictures, or excuse me, of colors and different designs. And maybe it's something completely different from that. Maybe it's something that was thought about to help take your mind off of the war, something to be able to take you to a different place. And that's, again, that's what this program is about, is to be able to reach into your heart, reach into your mind, your body, and your soul, and to allow you to express yourself in a manner that hasn't been expressed before. And sometimes there may be some tears. And I would say there's probably going to be a lot of tears, because when you express yourself like that, sometimes those tears are uncontrollable. They just flow. And so we want this to be part of a healing program for our veterans and their family members. Our men and women sacrifice and serve every day that they're on active duty reserve, National Guard. They put their lives on the line. They see their buddies, men and women, who lose their lives and they don't come home. They see enemy actions. They see fear. They see the hatred of the world out there. And yet we're there to do a job. We're there to preserve peace and freedom for other countries, for other people who have been oppressed and held back and maybe tortured or murdered also. And we see these things first things. We experience these things face to face. And then we have to suppress those things and come home and back to our daily lives here in the United States and try to live with these things that are still in our memories. And so this is another opportunity for us to bring those things to the surface slowly, but in a process that's a healing way and in like-minded, so that they know that we as fellow veterans with this program care. And that's the biggest thing, is knowing that somebody else cares, somebody else has been there, and that this program is part of that healing process. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. We'll be right back.
Did you know that the City of Reading has started licensing commercial cannabis activities within the city limits? Synergy is the first of the city's approved retailers to obtain licensure, bringing to the Reading area the most experienced retailer in the North State. They will ensure that your visit is both professional and comfortable. Access is simple and discreet. Synergy has a private 25-space parking lot at the back of the building. Synergy is located at 345 Hempstead Drive, Reading.
It's never too late to achieve your dream, to turn a skill into a career. At Shasta College, we have late start classes right now and online classes where the commute from the couch to the class has never been easier. We're also offering 8-week compressed classes, same units, half the time. Now is the right time to upskill or reskill for high-demand jobs employers are hiring for. Find out more. Visit ShastaCollege.edu today.
For over 50 years, House of Realty has provided experienced and effective advice to its real estate clients. Experts in residential, commercial, and investment property, we have the knowledge and tools to assist you with all of your real estate needs. Family owned and operated since 1965, we have been an active part of the Shasta County community for generations. Please call House of Realty today at 241-8300, a reputation for excellence since 1965.
Want to have the most unique, memorable Valentine's weekend? Shining Care presents The Shining Affair. Saturday, February 13th, 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. The best part? It's happening from the comfort and safety of your own home. It's an elegant virtual evening of interactive entertainment, including live music from FM Flyby. Enter or watch a fun lip-sync challenge, the Best in Bling contest, and much more. You join the party with Zoom and let the fun begin. With the party in a box, you'll have all the contents to create your own festive backdrop for everyone to see. Plus, mingle and see everyone's bling attire on your Zoom screen. Join CR Gibbs mixologists in making a signature cocktail. Vote on the lip sync challenge performances and best in bling outfits. Be moved by testimonials of Shining Care's mission of compassionate support, expert guidance, and assistance to at-risk elders for safety and well-being. Tickets start at just $25, available at shiningcare.org. Proceeds benefit Shining Care's programs to help at-risk elders in our community.
Every Monday from 6 to 8 p.m., join us at Radio Wasteland, your local guide to the unexplained and the unknown. Each week, we cover all things unexplained, from the moving stars in the sky to the things that go bump in the night. Visit us as we explore these topics and more as our in-studio team digs deeper with featured guests and listener call-ins. Mondays are rough, but now your overworked brain has the chance for some sweet relief with Radio Wasteland.
Radio Wasteland, Mondays at 6 on KCNR.
If tomorrow all the things were gone I'd worked for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife, I thank my lucky stars to be living here today, where the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away. From the lakes of Minnesota to the hills of Tennessee,
across the plains of Texas, oh, from sea to shining sea,
from Detroit down to Houston and New York to L.A., where there's pride in every American heart, and it's time we stand and say, there ain't no doubt.
Good morning. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions, and I'll tell you what, I'll stand up every day to defend this nation still. After 23 years in the Navy Seabees and two combat tours in Iraq, I've seen the sacrifice of men and women on the battlefield, and I know how important it is for us to be able to have the freedoms and the liberties that we have right here. So many people have never served. They've never had to sacrifice. They've never had to put their life on the line. They've never had to put themselves in a compromising position to whether they're going to stay alive or not, and how important it is for us to continue to honor those who have served. But it's how important is it for us right now in our nation for us to continue standing for what we believe in, because it's the right thing to do. One of the things I want to talk to you about this morning is a project that the Postal Service has put together. It's called Operation Protect Veterans. Our veterans deserve a lot of things: praise, honor, security, and respect. Here's what they don't deserve: attempts to take advantage of their service. Yet every day scammers attempt to defraud our veterans and of their hard-earned benefits, steal their identity, and take their savings. Together we can fight back and take one small step to repay our veterans for the service they've given and the sacrifices that they've made. America's veterans are warriors, trained to handle anything a battlefield can throw at them. But there's one foe many veterans struggle to defeat, and that's domestic fraud. 78% of our retired military men and women have been targeted by scams specifically crafted to exploit their military service and history. Sadly, veterans are twice as likely to actually fall for fraudulent schemes. In 2018, AARP research found that 18% of veterans have lost money to scammers, compared to only 8% of non-military public. Why is it that's the way it is? For starters, veterans implicitly trust fellow members of the military, making them vulnerable to imposters. Veterans also have a PTSD rate more than double the general public's, which can make it more difficult for them to recognize and combat the emotional manipulation used by scam artists and fraudulent individuals. So the program that is put together is called Operation Protect Veterans. It's put out by the U.S. Postal Inspection Service, and it's a way that they're fighting back against these fraudulent scam artists that are trying to take advantage of our military personnel. Not just the military personnel, it's also the widows and the elderly veterans, because they're looking for help. They're looking for a way to take care of issues that they have in their lives. And so sometimes they reach out to people who take advantage. And these scam artists are out there all over our nation. They're online. They're in our community. And so we want to remind you that if you have information or if you have questions about certain things, don't just jump to conclusions. We have a veteran service office here in our community, and you can call that veteran service office. Celestina Traver is the VSO, the veteran service officer there. That office can answer questions for you and let you know whether something is fraudulent or whether it's a correct organization in our community. You can also reach out to us at the Northern California Veterans Museum through our programs with Homeward Bound Military Family Support Services and Silver Star Veterans and Widows. And if we don't have that information for you, we can find that out. But the other one, the other phone number that I'd like to give you is the phone number for the Postal Service for Operation Protect Veterans, and that is 877-908-3360. 877-908-3360, and you can get that information from us at the Northern California Veterans Museum. We also have a small blurb on our website at norcalveteransmuseum.org. And also, if you have interest in the Battlefield Expressions program, you can call the Veterans Museum office. That number is 378-2280. That is in Anderson at the Anderson Veterans Museum offices. That's 378-2280. We can get that information to you. And if you want to be an applicant for the program, to be one of the artists, we'd like you to go to the museum website, and that's norcalveteransmuseum.org, norcalveteransmuseum.org, and go to Battlefield Expressions. Click on the button there for the art program, and there's an application there you can fill out. You can submit it online, and you can go ahead and get your name reserved. Like I said, we have 200 kits, artist kits, that we'll be handing out here to our Northern California veterans and their families at no cost. This is part of the grant, and these are a gift to you to say thank you for your service and to allow you to be part of the program in order for you to go ahead and be able to participate and be part of that healing process. You know, we talk about our freedoms and things that are taking place, and it's with the Northern California Veterans Museum, we try to educate about our freedoms and our Constitution and the history that is so important. You know, I've said this before, but I'll read it again. Freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. We didn't pass it to our children in the bloodstream. It must be fought for, protected, and handed on for them to do the same. Or one day we will spend our sunset years telling our children and our children's children what it was like to be free in the United States as free men. And that was by President Ronald Reagan. And that continues today. We see every day that the different political system that is out there is chipping away at our freedoms and our liberties that we have. They're taking away the patriotism that we have in our schools, in our nation. Our country seems to be in the midst of an identity crisis, divided, confused, and adrift. Change is the watchword of the moment, yet there is little consideration about where it is that we may be going. Everything is rapidly moving forward, despite a general sense among us that we are entering uncharted territory. Nevertheless, there are increasing calls for America to get back to its first principles, to reset its compass, so to speak, as a way to give direction to our rudderless politics. It has long been fashionable to believe that American culture has become too fragmented and pluralistic to justify our faith in a common creed, and few of our academic elites have shown an inclination to think seriously about what our age-old political principles mean for a modern society. Despite broad popular agreement about the importance of these principles of making just such an effort, it's been viewed through several different articles that I've read. Several hundred educational cultural leaders came together to list books they have written concerning the education, and 10 came to the surface that every educated high school graduate should have read. Hundreds of texts received a few mentions, but the principal documents of American history, the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, the Federalist Papers, were cited again and again by most respondents. These reflected a widespread belief in the reading of these core documents. And other early American writings, students would learn something important not only about America, but also about politics simply, which would shed light on the great issues, both then and now. It is possible that the guidance we are looking for, the framework for the change we seek, and the most compelling vision of true American progress is to be found in the principles declared by a fledgling nation more than 200 years ago. At a time when there is no shortage of books that argue the specific policies and political agendas, it is important for us to still hold these truths that all men are created equal. And it is refreshing, it's radical. According to the original meaning of the word, it looks to the root of what we believe and seek to conserve, the liberating principles, practical wisdom, and constitutional insights of the American founding. It's so important for us to make clear and a compelling case for America's principles as an enduring source of real, practical guidance for today, in explaining how we got off track and laying out how we can get our nation back on course. It is so important as we continue to move forward for us to be able to come back to these principles. Even though many say that the Constitution is out of date, that it no longer applies to our nation as we speak today, but without our original founding documents, we have no nation, because that is what we were founded upon. In the last annual message to Congress, 1 month before he issued the Emancipation Proclamation, Abraham Lincoln spoke of how we shall nobly save or meaningly lose the last best hope of earth. I firmly believe that we are still that hope, and that it is still our power and still our responsibility to uphold and advance the truths of human freedom. The source of that belief and that hope is America's eternal capacity for rededicating itself to these truths that we hold, and is applicable to all men at all times. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. We'll be right back.
North State Now is a magazine formatted show at 6 p.m. every Thursday night. The first Thursday is yours truly, Linda Bott, featuring what's going on in our town. The second Thursday is hosted by Michelle Slade, featuring heroes of the North State. The third Thursday is hosted by none other than James Masada and Rhonda Alvey from Enjoy the Magazine and Enjoy the Store. Our newest edition is the fourth Thursday of the month, Women of Vision. That's North State Now, Thursday at 6 p.m., also streaming on KCNR 14.
Remember us, the Tula Kids? Well, we're back, and we would like to ask you a few questions.
Do you love TV? Do you like low prices? Call our daddy.
Hi, this is Doug Tooley with B&T Satellite. You know that by not calling the 800 number for your satellite needs, you get local service, faster installation, and most importantly, we speak your language. We ask the questions to ensure you get the right package for you and your family. We do big dishes, we do little dishes, we do internet dishes, we even do dish dishes.
Dad, I have never seen you do dishes.
That's because I do them most of the time.
So do I.
No, you don't.
Hey, kids, we're working here. Give us a call, and we'll help you figure out the best for your family. Whether it's dish services or local antenna help or streaming services, call me, Doug Tooley, 241-DISH. That's 241-3474. Or visit us on the internet at btsatellite.com.
B&T Satellite is a DISH authorized retailer. Restrictions apply. Ask for details.
Slow down. Hi, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt. My chiropractic and nutrition practice in downtown Reading has been helping people feel better for over 20 years. We pride ourselves in really listening to our patients and then tailoring a program of nutrition, chiropractic care, massage, and exercise that's just right for you. The results can be dramatic. Call 244-7873. That's 244-7873. Thank you.
Want to have the most unique, memorable Valentine's weekend? Shining Care presents The Shining Affair. Saturday, February 13th, 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. The best part? It's happening from the comfort and safety of your own home. It's an elegant virtual evening of interactive entertainment, including live music from FM Flyby. Enter or watch a fun lip-sync challenge, the Best in Bling contest, and much more. You join the party with Zoom and let the fun begin. With the party in a box, you'll have all the contents to create your own festive backdrop for everyone to see. Plus, mingle and see everyone's bling attire on your Zoom screen. Join CR Gibbs mixologists in making a signature cocktail. Vote on the lip sync challenge performances and best in bling outfits. Be moved by testimonials of Shining Care's mission of compassionate support, expert guidance, and assistance to at-risk elders for safety and well-being. Tickets start at just $25, available at shiningcare.org. Proceeds benefit Shining Care's programs to help at-risk elders in our community.
I expected to be a lot easier.
I didn't know what step to take next.
I was transitioning from the military. I was a vehicle gunner.
An avionics specialist.
I missed my unit, my family.
Playing with my daughter, I'd felt like a stranger.
I didn't have a clear sense of what to do next.
And then I thought, if I'm going through this, other veterans have gone through it too, right?
So I reached out, and I saw that I wasn't alone.
Go to maketheconnection.net to learn how other veterans have overcome the challenges of transitioning out of the military.
To victory.
Good morning. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions, and that is dedicated to our guest that we have with us this morning, Bob Prosser. You know, right now we are still in the portion. We're a membership with the National Commemoration of the Vietnam War, and the Northern California Veterans Museum is a partner with that national organization. And so one of the programs we're putting together is to be able to honor our Vietnam veterans, to have them come in and talk about their stories, whether they're a Vietnam veteran era veteran or they're a combat veteran. The whole idea is for us to be able to share their stories, their experiences, and to make sure that we honor them. Bob, right off the bat, I want to say welcome home and thank you for your service, for being here in our community as a veteran, and then also for the things that you do in our community. And through the commemoration for Vietnam veterans, the Northern California Veterans Museum, toward the summer, we're going to be putting together a dinner for our Vietnam veterans and to be putting this program together to honor them. And that's part of the national commemoration for our Vietnam era veterans, to make sure that they know at this celebration dedication that we not only honor those who have served, but we recognize those that are still with us, so that you know that we care as an organization and as a nation. It doesn't matter what the general populace thinks. Right now, the general populace is still upside down and backwards. We don't care about that. What we care about is us here in our community, where we're saying, you know what, here's our handshake, welcome home, and thank you for what you've done for us. Thank you for being here with us this morning, Bob, as we talk about your service in the Army and some of the other things that you're doing here in our community and your service with the fish and game. Welcome.
Thank you.
There's always a benefactor when an individual joins the military. There's usually a family member or someone in their past or somebody that's influenced them and given them kind of a boost into which direction they're going to go. I know that you've got some uncles and family members that serve. Tell us a little bit about that influence in your life.
Well, my mother had three brothers that served, one Army, one Navy, a CB, and one Marine. Well, the Army and the Navy made it home, and my uncle Robert, who I was named after, was killed November 20th, 1943 at Tarawa. That was the opening day of the battle. And he's my parents named me after him, and then his experience from being in the service, that really got me excited about it. I enlisted in the Army at age 17, 2 weeks after I graduated from high school, from Shasta High School here in Reading. Spent 3 years in Germany as a wheel and track vehicle mechanic. And I noticed that you had to have 13 months left to go on your service transfer to Vietnam, because the tour was 1 year. And when I left Germany in May of 67, they were taking quite a number of people every month out of Europe and sending them to Vietnam. And but today you had to have at least 13 months to go. I have all of my uncles' decorations, ribbons, the flag with 48 stars on it, where they brought him home. His casket is buried down at the Golden Gate National Cemetery in San Bruno. He's paper. I've got a letter that's signed by Franklin Roosevelt. It's not just a letter. It's a plaque. It's about 14 by 18 size. I've got that framed. James Forrestal was the Undersecretary of the Navy. He has honored my uncle also, and I've got that framed also. My parents kept all this stuff in a fireproof box, and we never even looked at it. We knew that he died in the war, but we never looked at it as children growing up. And when we finally put my mother in a home, we looked at it, and it was they even had the telegram that Western Union sent my grandparents. And the local newspaper that grew up in Edgewood, which is up by Weed, the newspaper from November 20th, 1943, has his obituary, and it's the whole entire newspaper. This is a major time warp here, going back to November, was that 75 years ago?
So basically, when you found that box, it was like a time capsule.
Yeah. Oh, yes, it definitely was. And my brother was not in the service, but he let me have all the paperwork that came out of the box. His Purple Hearts, he was a corporal when he was killed, and it's always been a thought in my mind about it. I think that's one of the main things that stimulated me and gave me the incentive to join the military. And so I say June of 64, right out of getting out of high school, I went into the Army, went to Fort Ord, and spent the rest of my 3 years over in Germany I was in a field artillery unit working on Jeeps, trucks, 155 self-propelled units.
Now, where did you go to boot camp?
At Fort Ord. Yeah, we were down at Fort Ord, and one day it was either July or August. They decided that they said go down to the rifle room and pick your rifle up and load your duffel bag up. And we sat in our barracks for 3 days, no training, no nothing, just down to eat, back to barracks. And late one night, they came in and hauled everybody, every other company out of Fort Ord and sent them to wherever they were going to train to go to Vietnam. And we got up the next morning and turned everything in, and I kept looking around going, where is everybody? So half the basic training unit was gone. I think they went back to South Carolina, North Carolina, where they did all the training before they shipped them to Vietnam. So we lost a major amount of people there. A lot more room then.
Right. Well, yeah, because usually you're standing in line. It's elbow to elbow, and you're lucky if you get something hot at the end of the line if you don't get there right on time. And so so from there, where did you go to school? Since at that point they didn't choose your unit to go to Vietnam.
Yeah.
Where did you go from there?
Right. Stayed at Fort Ord to do basic and advanced infantry training. Learned how to work on trucks and tanks and stuff. And then went from, I think it was late November, early December, went right from there, flew us to New York, and jumped on a boat and went over to Germany. Worst boat ride I've ever had.
What kind of boat was it?
Oh, I have
just
no idea.
Some ship?
It was that's all it was on it. It was dependents and GIs.
Wow.
Going over there. It was a pretty, you know.
Probably leftover World War II?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Obviously, it was some type of
a Liberty ship.
Yeah, Liberty ship. I was trying to think of the name of it. Yeah, because the bunks, they were like six high, and they'd fold them up and hose everything out. And because you had to leave, you had to go up on deck to get out of there, and they cleaned everything up. And it was so warm, all you had was a sheet to cover yourself. You didn't need a blanket at all. But, yeah, it was quite an interesting boat ride.
I've heard some of the stories of my father talking about riding on the Liberty ships, and he said they were flat-bottom ships because they made them so fast. And that every time it went through a swell, it'd go up and come down, and the whole ship would just slam against the waves there. He said every time they went to sea, it was the worst that it could be. Just the exact same thing. It's like riding in a cracker box getting kicked around.
These boats weren't quite that rough, so they may have been something a little different, maybe a little deeper V on them.
Well, yeah, because that was during the typhoon there in 44 when they were in the South Pacific is what he was referring back to. But he said that the bow would go up over the top of the crest of the wave, and you could see for miles, and then all of a sudden it would come back down into the trough, and there'd be 12 feet of water above the bow as it was going through the trough of the waves.
Well, what do you call the back? The fantail?
Stern.
Stern. Well, I know it's the stern, but I mean there's
yes.
The very lower part, we'd be standing on all the way around the back of the ship there, and the boat was going through. The waves were quite rough then, and I'm sitting there looking down and having the water come rushing up at you, thinking, you know, it's going to take you off. And then it would go back down again, and the top part of the propellers would actually come out of the water. And so they were quite deep swells then.
And you could probably feel the ship shudder when that prop came out of the water.
It wasn't the whole prop. It was just the top part of it. You know, maybe a third of it came out of the water. And then, I... 60, 80 feet, 100 feet distance from where we were down to where the propeller was.
Right.
Quite a distance there. Very interesting.
Well, we're talking with Bob Prosser right now, and he is the Shasta Veterans Escort Commander for the Patriot Guard Riders here in Northern California. We're getting ready to take a break. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions, KCNR 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, your talk radio. We'll be right back.
A jewel of the North State, a place we love to go and love being members.
The view, the best in the North State, from the restaurants, meeting rooms, and of course on the award-winning 18-hole golf course, Riverview Golf and Country Club. It's the place to belong.
Go in and meet the friendly staff today or go to their website at riverviewgolf.net and find out about their introductory memberships.
Riverview Golf and Country Club, corporate, social, tennis, fitness, and golf. Get it all. Become a member.
It's affordable and fun. Riverview Golf and Country Club.
It's never too late to achieve your dream, to turn a skill into a career. At Shasta College, we have late start classes right now and online classes where the commute from the couch to the class has never been easier. We're also offering 8-week compressed classes, same units, half the time. Now is the right time to upskill or reskill for high-demand jobs employers are hiring for. Find out more. Visit ShastaCollege.edu today.
At Shasta Regional Medical Group, we're focused on the health matters that matter to you, like having a primary care doctor you trust. Our physicians put patients first. They take the time to listen to your needs and concerns, and they provide the information you need to make good decisions about your own health. At Shasta Regional Medical Group, you have an integrated network of caregivers and specialists working to serve you in a compassionate, patient-centered environment. We're conveniently located right across the street from Shasta Regional Medical Center. To make an appointment, call Shasta Regional Medical Group today at 605-4260 or visit us online at ShastaRegionalMedicalGroup.com. Shasta Regional Medical Group. Your primary care is our primary concern.
This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing. But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world. Family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
Your door. I hate to wake you up to say goodbye, but the dawn is breaking, it's early morn. Taxi's waiting, he's blowing his horn. Already I'm so lonesome I could cry. So kiss me and smile for me, tell me that you wait for me. Like you'll never let me go. I'm leaving on a jet plane. I don't know when I'll be back again. Oh, babe, I hate to go.
You're listening to Battlefield Expressions, and that is the Sleeping on a Jet Plane by Peter, Paul, and Mary. And it was a traditional, I don't say traditional, it was a live song. That was what was playing at the time in 64, 65 through the Vietnam War. And that song was used a lot for people, men, young boys, teenagers that were drafted or joined the military and were leaving to go across the world to Vietnam. And so we'll be playing some reminiscent songs like that every now and then as we remember and we look back at the commemorations of the Vietnam War. And it kind of brings a little bit of the music that was playing. I mean, that's the soft music that was playing during that time. And there's some pretty radical music that came out during the Vietnam War. Our guest again this morning is Bob Prosser, a Vietnam veteran, era veteran. And Bob, we were talking about you. You didn't take a jet; you took a ship over to Germany when you were getting ready for deployment. Tell us a little bit. That was 1964.
Yeah, 1964. It was late November, early December. I forget exactly when it was, but it was just a troop transport. There were dependents and GIs going to Europe, where whatever part of Europe they were going to, maybe England and different areas, but they were all going to Europe. And we landed. I think it was Bremerhaven, which is the northern part of Germany, and then we went to our units then. And like I said, I spent my time in Germany. I was a wheel and track vehicle mechanic. I was assigned the service battery of the 13th Artillery. And we started off with a 105 towed, and we're out in the field, and I got over there, and we went out there as a brand-new E2, I think I was by then. And And they decided, oh, let's take these back and trade them in. And they gave us the 155 self-propelled. Well, the artillery batteries, A, B, and C battery, they needed to train on these. So we went back out in the field, and I believe it was about 7 months that we were in the field living in a sleeping bag in a tent while the gun drivers could drive these things, shoot them, and get familiar with them. And I was concerned about never, ever going camping again because I'm living in a tent and a sleeping bag for all those months.
I understand how that is.
And besides, it was cold, too, but that was up in the northern part of eastern part of Germany, Grafenwehr and Wielsack and Hohenfels were the three targeting areas. I think they still use them today, but it was quite an interesting time, and it was living. We used coal to heat everything. And this one guy, I forget what his name was, Thomas Manning, that was his name. He volunteered to work the fires, keep the fires going so we'd have hot water. Well, I didn't know the guy before, but I thought he was a black man. And because all you could see was his eyes and his lips. And then one day he came out of there because when they brought the coal in, they didn't have any filters for the dust or anything. It was just a mess. I'm not sure how he lived through all that, living in that box there. And he was out and he was sitting there talking to me, and I didn't have a clue who this guy was because I'd never seen him without, head to toe covered in coal dust. And he finally told me who it was, and I said, "You got to be kidding me, I said, "Don't you have a mask or something, a handkerchief put over your face?" I mean, it doesn't do any good. It just plugs up. And, but it was obviously Germany, cold winters, good winters over there, bad winters, and it'd go from the springtime. But the barracks we stayed in, they were the World War II German barracks. They weren't called forts. They were called caserns. And they'd have, I think, where I was in Augsburg, southern Germany, that's in Bavaria, there were about five of them, different ones. And one of them, I can't remember the name, it was so long ago, 1964, it was the hospital thing. So you went from where your base was with the armored artillery, no infantry where we were, and you'd go from there and just travel around different areas doing all your maintenance and then go out in the field and have maneuvers and play.
So the 155 howitzer is kind of like a tank, only it's mainly a cannon on wheels.
Right. No, it's a tracked vehicle.
Well, okay. So my bad. So not wheels, but tracked vehicles. Yeah. So I knew that. I said the wrong thing. Yeah. And then we were talking about the 105s, but the 105s were the little field howitzers,
yes,
that they towed behind the Jeeps.
They'd have a 5-ton because the 5-ton had all the ammunition in it. I'm not sure if a Jeep would tow it. There's a fair amount of down pressure on it, so it would probably wouldn't have any steering on it. But they always towed them with the 5-tons because they had all the ammunition on there. And then on the 105, the round is it's one piece like a rifle bullet. It's all put together. But the 155, you put the projectile in, and those things weigh 98 pounds, and then you put the powder in behind that. And it was quite interesting. They provided us no hearing protection whatsoever.
Kind of like breathing protection.
Yes, exactly. They got
thank you, government.
Yeah, the guys that were in the unit, they had hearing protection so they could talk to each other. And when that thing went, they wouldn't tell you when they were going to pull the trigger on it. They didn't send a flag or everything. And I mean, shooting a 98-pound projectile 20 some miles. A lot of power, a lot of noise. And they had a muzzle suppressor on it, or a fly suppressor. I'm not sure exactly what they call that big unit, but it also brought the noise back on the sides there. And, Lord, it was loud. And you just think, well, I have this wonderful thing, this ringing in my ear called tinnitus or tinnitus, whatever you're pronunciating. And it's nonstop, 24/7, this ringing in both of my ears because of those loud noises.
I know that when we were preparing for convoys in Iraq, we were stationed there in Fallujah, and just outside the marshaling yard where we would pick up all of our semi-trucks for the haul was a field of 155 Marine Corps tubes. And they were set up in a half circle, a half moon circle, and they would get a fire mission. They'd fire right down range anywhere. We were within probably 500 yards of where that yard was there in the marshaling yard. And toward the end of the tour, my nerves were shot anyway, just from everything taking place, the IEDs, enemy action, everything. we would be preparing those vehicles, getting ready for a convoy about 9 or 10 o'clock at night. And all of a sudden, they'd get a fire mission, and the tubes would just fire off in multiple rounds. And it would literally drive me to my knees because, number one, it startled me. And then it was like all of a sudden you didn't know where you were, what was going on, because it just throws you for a loop. And then you just hunkered down until it was done. You knew that you were safe. They weren't coming. They were going out. But it was there was so much that happens at that time with everything going on that and I still sometimes I still have a hard time with loud noises that just all of a sudden show up. And so, yes, so I understand your tinnitus. I have that ringing in my ears constantly. You learn to ignore it, but sometimes it's like really loud crickets all the time. And so, but yes, I understand how those tubes go off like that.
Surprises you for sure.
Especially as a CB.
Yeah.
Being around the Marines, you never know what you're going to get exposed to.
Yeah, we speak slowly and use small words for the Marines.
There you go. Well, you know, the thing with the Marines and the CBs, the Marines blow it up and the CBs rebuild it. So somebody's got to be there to take care of it.
Yeah, we're talking about my uncle that was killed in Tarawa. He last month, I can't remember the gentleman's last name. They discovered his body. He was killed November 23rd, 1943, and buried. There were 30 Marines buried in a common grave. And they lost the mapping where it was located. And probably the CBs dug the graves, and they put it in there, and they had it going. Well, they lost it. And then that was early last year, I think it was January of last year, there was a big storm over there at Tarawa, and they'd actually built a house over the grave. And the wind and the rain and whatever else went on blew the house over and uncovered this grave of 30 Marines in it, and they were able to bring this man home. Well, as a member of the Patriot Guard Riders and the Shasta Veterans Escort, we drove down to Sacramento Airport where they brought his remains in, and we provided an escort back to Red Bluff. And that was the 19th of January. And then the 23rd, we went back to Red Bluff. It was it Hoyt Cole Chapel of the Flowers. And we went back down there on the 23rd, and we provided an escort out to the IGO, to the Northern California Veterans Cemetery in IGO, and stood a flag line and an honor guard for this fallen veteran from, 70-some years ago.
And the Northern California Veterans Museum has a display there in the lobby. If you go in there for World War II Marines, and it has all the different rifles that were used at that time, and it has the uniform of what they wore at that time with the original World War II items that are in there to honor that Marine, but to honor all the Marines that served and all of our personnel that served during World War II. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. We'll be right back.
Called him Sandy Kane. You folks even knew his name. But a hero, yes, was he. Left boy, came back a man. Still many just don't understand about the reasons we are free. Can't forget the look in his eyes, or the tears he cried, as he said these words to me. All gave some.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.
Breaking news this hour at townhall.com. I'm Bob Agnew in Washington. A group of Republicans calling for Speaker Nancy Pelosi to be fined after they say she failed to abide by newly implemented rules requiring members to go through metal detectors before entering the House chamber.
Republicans in the House Administration Committee sent a letter to Acting Sergeant-at-Arms Timothy Blodgett on Friday requesting the fine, arguing Pelosi should have to abide by the new rules that she pushed to implement. The Republicans wrote yesterday at approximately 9:59 a.m., multiple members observed the Speaker of the House entering the House chamber without completing security screening. House Democrats voted this week to impose a $5,000 fine for first offenses and $10,000 for the second for members who failed to comply with the new screenings. Two Republicans were issued fines on Friday. Bernie Bennett in Washington.
Two surveys show China's manufacturing growth weakened in January, suggesting its rebound from the coronavirus pandemic is leveling off. Here's correspondent Jeremy House.
A purchasing managers index released by business magazine Caixin declined to 51.5 from December's 53 on a 100-point scale, on which numbers above 50 show activity expanding. A separate index by the National Statistics Agency and an official industry group, the China Federation of Logistics and Purchasing, retreated to 51.3 from the previous month's 51.9. Chinese manufacturing benefited from the country's relatively early reopening, from a shutdown to fight the virus, and demand for masks and other exports. Jeremy House reporting.
Alaska Senator Dan Sullivan says President Biden's attack on the fossil fuel industry is based on the false premise that the U.S. is lagging behind when it comes to clean energy.
2005 to 2017, guess which country reduced greenhouse gas emissions more than any other country in the world by far? It was America's.
Senator Sullivan was interviewed by the Salem Radio Network this week. More on these stories from townhall.com.
In 1901, a woman by the name of Annie Taylor climbed into a barrel so that she could ride that barrel over Niagara Falls, the first person to do so. The reason for her crazy endeavor? She was struggling to make ends meet, and she was hoping for fame and financial security. It's Ryan from United Faith Mortgage, a faith and family mortgage team that tries to improve your financial outlook without having to ship you over a 170-foot waterfall. Our mortgage team happens to be an arm of a bigger company who is a direct lender, which means our company gets to use its own money and make its own decisions within its own walls. There's no middleman. This advantage often allows us to get you a better rate, which can save you monthly and lifelong money through a refinance, or help you with a cash-out refinance, cashing out some of your home's equity to use for life. We are United Faith Mortgage.
United Faith Mortgage is a DBA of United Mortgage Corp, 25 Melville Park Road, Melville, New York. Licensed mortgage banker. For all licensing information, go to animalistconsumeraccess.org. Corporate animalist number 1335. Rack animalist number 65233. Equal housing lender. Not licensed in Alaska, Hawaii, Georgia, Massachusetts, North Dakota, South Dakota, or Utah.
Israel's effort to free up hospital beds in the midst of the coronavirus pandemic appears to be working. The latest from the Media Line's Felice Friedson.
Two Israeli hospitals say it appears their cures for coronavirus are working. Researchers at Tel Aviv's Ichilov Hospital have completed a study on 30 COVID-19 patients in moderate to serious condition. All but one taking the drug showed improvement within 2 days and had recovered and were released from the hospital 5 days after treatment began. The remaining patient was released only days later. In Jerusalem, Hadassah Medical Center treated 21 patients in critical condition and suffering from underlying conditions. 19 of the test patients recovered within 6 days and were released from the hospital after only 8 days. Both hospitals have petitioned the health ministry to broaden the study to more patients. I'm Felice Friedson, Town Hall News, Jerusalem.
Breaking news and analysis at themedialine.org and townhall.com. President Biden is moving ahead on his $1.9 trillion COVID relief plan, with or without Republicans. Here's White House correspondent Greg Cluxton.
The president argues that time is of the essence when it comes to passing a COVID stimulus measure.
So I'm going to act. I'm going to act fast.
Mr. Biden says he prefers to have the support of Republicans.
But they're just not willing to go as far as I think we have to go.
With job creation stalling, the president says the country needs a big, bold response to deal with the financial and health crises. Greg Clugston, Washington.
Americans are being encouraged to stay home for the Super Bowl this weekend. The NFL's championship game is a massive social event every year, prompting countless parties and in-person gatherings. CDC Director Dr. Rochelle Walensky says Americans should stay home for this year's Super Bowl. She says new COVID-19 cases are back to pre-Thanksgiving levels, but now is simply not the time to let down our guard. More on these stories at townhall.com.
Sharp as knives,
were so gung-ho to lay down our lives. We came in spastic, like tameless horses. We left in plastic, as numbered corpses. And we learned fast to travel. Our arms were heavy, but our bellies were tight. We had no home front. We had no soft soap. They sent us Playboy. They gave us Bravo. We dug in deep and shot on sight and prayed to Jesus Christ with all of our might. We had no cameras to shoot the landscape. We passed the hash.
Listening to Battlefield Expressions, and that is Goodnight Saigon by Billy Joel, and talking about being in Vietnam and the combat at night. And it's, you know, I can remember when we were in Iraq and dealing with the enemy action at night, and our packs, by the end of a 12 or 15 hour combat mission, you're just exhausted. And we would carry 100 to 125 pounds in our sappies, which was our combat vest with the plates and combat loads, and our fighting knives and compasses, and you need extra. I carried ammunition for the M4, M16, and I also carried rounds for 12 gauge, the double aught. And then also for my 9mm. So I had three combat loads of three different types of ammunition whenever we stepped out of the vehicle, plus some tools, because you couldn't get back to the vehicle once the doors were shut if you were coming under enemy fire. So you had to be able to take care of and do whatever you needed to, and then get back in your vehicle. And the thing about a Humvee that is up armored, which means it has combat metal on it to keep bullets from penetrating it, is if you leave your doors open, a bullet that doesn't go in doesn't come out. So if you left your doors open and a sniper round came into the vehicle, that round would just bounce around on the inside of the vehicle. It would take out multiple personnel. So you had to make sure that every time you got on your vehicle, you shut it as fast as possible. And then you were outside. And when you're outside, you're vulnerable. So it just a total mindset, the concept of different things like that. We're coming back. We're talking with Bob Prosser. He's a Vietnam-era veteran, and we're talking about you being in Germany. And we'll talk a little bit earlier about some of the things that took place, like when you're getting paid and things like that. I thought it was really interesting when you're talking about that. Maybe you could share that a little bit more with us. And then we want to talk about when you came home and what it was like when you came home.
Yeah, when we got paid, we lived in German World War II German barracks. There were three levels on it, three stories. And then when you got paid, everybody lined up on one side, one wall on one side, and you went into the captain's office and saluted and told, and gave your name and serial number and everything. And everything was paid in cash, and so they would get right, you know, hand you whatever dollars you were making. And I know when I left the Army in May of 67, I was at the top step of my pay grade as an E-4 specialist, fourth class. I was making $210 or $212 a month. That's correct, $200 a month. That's what I got. But all my food and room and board was all taken care of. So I was probably making $215 a month. But, and then we go from there. And then after you saw the captain, you went over, came out, and you went to the opposite wall, and there would be all the duty rosters, whether you're going to have guard duty or KP or by the time I left, they had the transfers up there where people were involuntarily being transferred out of the unit and sent to Vietnam. And there was quite a number of them that were, you know, every month. You had to have 13 months to go because the tour was a year. And then if you had 13 months or shorter, you were pretty good. But if you had 13 months or more, you were likely to be shipped out to Vietnam. And one of the guys that was in my maintenance section, he volunteered to go over there, and they turned him down. They denied his transfer because they were so short of people. But he got so upset about it that he wrote his congressman, and they had a congressional investigation. And, boy, let me tell you, the doo-doo hit the fan over that. And so the battalion commander came out and said, hey, if you want to go, please come to me, and I'll sign that transfer. He didn't want those guys showing up on his door again.
It's amazing that you go from one extreme to the other. You know, this guy, he joined, he wanted to serve, he wanted to be there in Vietnam, be part of the action. And then, you know, we had all of our guys that were drafted, and, you know, they didn't want to go. I mean, it's always the same. Even in our units, we had guys that were in reserve or whatever else, and you had a whole list of guys that were begging to go. And then you had people that didn't want to go, and they ended up going. And it's like, well, how come you never take the people who have the initiative to go and be a part of it? You always take people who choose not to want to go. And then you fight that attitude the entire time they're deployed. I just never completely understood that concept. But I guess it's been that way since the very beginning, and it probably won't change.
Yeah, probably not.
So when you're coming home, you know, the nation was kind of upside down and backwards, just kind of like it is right now. And what was your experience when you came home, Bob?
Well, they flew us from Germany to New York. The base where it's an old World War II air base called Fort Wadsworth. And they paid us. They gave us our money. We had the airlines were all set up there. Picked up a ticket to San Francisco to come home to Reading. And I'm waiting in the airport there at New York. I forget the name of what airport we were at. I mean, people, because you had to wear a uniform because you're basically like military standby on a flight. They were made rude comments to me. You know, they had no idea that I was in Germany, but just because I was in the military and wore a uniform, that I was how many babies have you killed? And I was going, what the hell's going on? I didn't realize that why the people were talking to me so rudely and everything. And it was even worse when I got to San Francisco. And I thought, well, I got to take this uniform off and get in some civilian clothes. But that was all part of the travel agreement. It was a standby. You had to wear a uniform. And so I got to San Francisco and wore my uniform back up here to Reading, and everything, it was totally different here in Reading. There was nobody was rude to me. If they looked at me, they didn't say anything, but the rude comments in both New York and San Francisco, and that was in May of 1967, they weren't very complimentary.
I know that my brother served in the Navy during Vietnam, 70 to 74, and he wouldn't wear his Navy uniform home. He was stationed on the USS Coral Sea out of San Diego. He was a mechanic on the F-4 Phantoms and the Wild Weasels. And so, my brother passed away a couple of years ago, so I just want to say an honor to my brother, Tom Burrows, who served in the Navy during Vietnam. He was a Vietnam-era veteran. The Coral Sea, he was never on the Coral Sea when it was over in East Asia, Southeast Asia. And so, but he was there out of San Diego, Miramar, Fighter Town, USA. And so I just want to do a shout-out and thank you to all of our Vietnam veterans who served and those who we've lost due to Agent Orange and to other injuries and things like that have taken their lives to their families. It's so important for us to remember all of those who serve regardless. And I know that there's a lot of guys, you had joined and you had volunteered, and there's a lot of guys out there that were drafted, and the guys that were drafted kind of have a different perspective of life, a different attitude of how things are, because once again, those that wanted to go didn't go, and those that had to go went because they chose not to go. And so it was very, very convoluted. And then to add all the social issues to it too, with the way the nation was and everything else. And I still don't completely understand that looking back at it. I was in 1975, I was only 13 years old, so I was never old enough to go to Vietnam. And so But Bob, as you came back, you transitioned, you went to school, and then you became a fish and game warden.
I got out in May of 67 and started going to Shasta College.
I didn't realize we've come up on our break. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back.
All right.
At Reading Electric Utility, we recognize the value of education and the impact it can have on our families and our community. Interested in pursuing a career in science, technology, engineering, or math? Start by applying for a college scholarship or technical school grant offered by Reading Electric Utility. For more information about available scholarships and grants, visit cityofreading.org/RU scholarships. Applications must be submitted by March 10, 2021. Your future looks bright.
You don't have to be a Native American to access quality health care. Reading Rancheria's Churn Creek Healthcare and Central Valley Healthcare are open to anyone with Medicare, Medi-Cal, or Partnership Health. Our health system never charges co-pays, deductibles, share of costs, or even a sliding fee scale. Patients never have to pay to access quality, compassionate health care. Reading Rancheria Tribal Health System, changing how health care is delivered. Call us today to schedule an appointment.
Hi, this is Brian Martin, General Manager of River Common Senior Living. One of the most rewarding things about what I do is watching the positive transformation that often occurs when a senior moves here to our beautiful, independent retirement community. Seniors can become isolated, find it hard to eat good, healthy meals, and even just get around. I call this a failure to thrive. At River Commons, we solve those challenges. You are surrounded by friendly people with similar life experiences. Chef Shalisa and her crew provide 3 delicious and healthy meals daily. Activities Director Ernie always has a wide variety of things to do, from arts and crafts to outings on our 25-passenger bus. Plus, we provide utilities, cable TV, scheduled transportation, weekly housekeeping, and more. We see seniors go from survive to thrive, and that is just a wonderful thing. Call today for a tour or luncheon a tour and experience River Commons for yourself. 221-2121 or on the web river-commons.com.
At Reading Electric Utility, we recognize the value of education and the impact it can have on our families and our community. Interested in pursuing a career in science, technology, engineering, or math? Start by applying for a college scholarship or technical school grant offered by Reading Electric Utility. For more information about available scholarships and grants, visit cityofreading.org/RU scholarships. Applications must be submitted by March 10, 2021. Your future looks bright.
Slow down. Hi, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt. My chiropractic and nutrition practice in downtown Reading has been helping people feel better for over 20 years. We pride ourselves in really listening to our patients and then tailoring a program of nutrition, chiropractic care, massage, and exercise that's just right for you. The results can be dramatic. Call 244-7873. That's 244-7873. Thank you.
Never fight another war. There are a lot of perfect questions as to what's worth fighting for. And there are a lot of perfect fools who refuse to read the writing on the wall. But the truth is, there are people who have made it crystal clear that it is their holy mission to destroy all we hold dear. And they are busily out searching for the fire to make this towering nation fall. Now we can just sit back and wait till they spill more precious blood, or we can seek these cowards out and nip their slaughter in the bud. Adios, sweet home and family. I am off to fight a war that must be won.
will know why I'm going when you see the snow-white rose of Arlington. Every blade of grass is sacred, every headstone is a shrine to somebody who was willing to put existence on the line. The liberty we take for granted, it was purchased with their patriotic lives. Are their sleeping spirits restless? Do they listen for the sound of the mustering of armies to defend their hallowed ground? Will we rise to the occasion and ensure that their life's legacy survives? Through the willows blow soft breezes, they are whispering my name, asking, did they die for nothing? Aren't I the keeper of the flame? Adios, sweet home and family. Wave goodbye to your Louisiana sun. You will know why I'm leaving when you see the snow-white rose.
Good morning. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. And once again, our guest this morning is Bob Prosser. And Bob, we're just finishing up talking about your home, coming back home, your homecoming, and how you were treated when you came back home. I wanted you to talk about your integration back into the community and going to school and what you did for a living after that. And then we want to talk about your service to our community with the Patriot Guard Riders and those in the community that serve right alongside of you honoring our veterans.
Yeah. Well, I'd say I came home in May of 67. I started going to Shasta College in September when it restarted, and I worked for the Fish and Game as a seasonal aide in the Redding office here. And the gentleman that I worked for, Mac Foster, I believe he's passed away now, he let me work there on an hourly basis during the school year so that I could go to school. And then when I got out of school, I went down to the office and took care of whatever needed to be done. And then during the summer, I worked full-time. And then in 1970, I was hired on full-time at the fish hatcheries at Nimitz Fish Hatchery and American River Hatcheries there in Rancho Cordova, which are on the American River right below Folsom Dam. And then in 1977, I promoted to game warden, and I was transferred to Long Beach. And being born and raised in California, I had never been to Southern California before in my life. And after I got down there, I realized why I had never gone down there. And I worked all commercial fishing industry down there, the big long-range boats that would go out and they'd bring the fish in, swordfish boats, you name it, like gill netting, everything that was going on. And then I left there and came back to Sacramento in 1980 and then went to South Lake Tahoe in 89 for 3 years. Thought it was the best job in the world till winter got there and there was nothing to do for about 4 or 5 months every year. So I left and came back to Sacramento and I worked on a special detail. It's called DBEEP, Delta Bay Enhanced Enforcement Project, and there were 10 of us on it. And we ran boats in the Delta in the lower Sacramento, and there's 1,100 miles of waterway in the Sacramento Delta. And that's all we did was patrol the waterways there. And that was a great job. I will never own a boat for the rest of my life after running a boat for all the last 10 years I worked. And I retired from that in 2001 and returned. I bought some property up in Whitmore and moved up there. And then I went to Shasta College, and I went to College of the Redwoods and American River College and a couple, I think Golden West down in Southern California there. Have quite a number of units on there, and my degree's in natural resources with a police science minor.
Well, that's pretty tough. You're never going to own a boat again. You're never going to go camping again.
Yeah.
Guys ask me all the time, why don't you go shooting? Why don't you go shooting? When we were in Iraq, we probably, before we even went into combat, we probably shot or fired close to 25,000 rounds apiece. And then when we got in country, we qualified on a regular basis By the time we got out of country, we probably fired over 50,000 rounds of ammunition downrange. And I don't care to clean a rifle again. I don't care to fire that rifle. My sons want to fire everything else, and that's great. Go out and enjoy yourself. But I know how to fire a rifle, and I don't want to clean a barrel again. And so, especially for inspection. Yeah. So, you know, we do what we have to for the museum and the collection and things like that. But as an individual, I have shot my fair share of rounds downrange.
It's like when I would go out and I'd contact somebody out in the field when I was a warden. They would say, oh, I bet you hunt and fish all the time. And my analogy was that was, I said, if you worked for See's Candy for 30 years, do you think you'd eat much chocolate? And so, yeah, because I do hunt and fish. I have no objection to anyone do it. I do very little hunting anymore, but I still enjoy going out trout fishing. I've got some friends. We go out bottom fishing, salmon fishing in the ocean. I have a buddy of mine that I went to college with, lives up at Lake Almanor, and he gets his boat out, and we go up. You know, trolling, fishing Lake Almanor about probably 2 or 3 days every year. And so I go up and spend time with him. He says, well, the only reason we're still friends is because you live so far away. But it's, I do fishing. I enjoy the outdoors. And I say when I was a warden, I did a lot of camping out, the staking out things where you, once you run across something, you can't leave it and come back another day. It may not be there. And you have to, it's called, you know, the chain of evidence. You have to know what's going on and who's doing what's going on. And if you leave it, you have to bring somebody else in to take your place. But my wife, you know, bless her heart, she didn't quite understand. She said, well, her comment was, well, when will you be home? I said, when I walk in the door. Because, I mean, there'd be days where you'd be gone, you know, 2 or 3 days on assignment, stuff like that. And you wouldn't have, you'd find something, you can't just leave it and walk off. And, of course, and I say we didn't have cell phones and, you know, you didn't want to call the office. Hey, could you call my wife and tell her I won't be home for dinner? But yeah, it was very interesting. And bless her heart, she put up with it.
Did you ever find yourself in positions where you were getting shot at or anything like that as a game warden?
There were a number of times that nobody actually tried. They probably would have shot me had, you know, things not been different. But I had a couple of bullets went over my head, you know, years back. But I had two Labrador retrievers when I worked up at Lake Tahoe, and that was the most out of the most remote place that I worked. And it was a week before trout season, and there were these two gentlemen out fishing on the Silver Fork of the American River, which is off of Highway 50 by the little town of Kybers. And they had all these jailhouse tattoos on them, you know, no color, just all the blue ink. And I was talking to them, and I mean, they were sitting there talking and talking, and I kept looking at them. I thought, you know, I might be able to take one of these guys, but there's no way that I can take both of these guys. So I opened up the tailgate on my pickup, and the key word to my Labradors, who, you know, typically everybody's had a Labrador, they wouldn't bite anything except a supper dish. I said, where's the cat? And they both started dancing around there, and their hair's all ruffled up on them. And one guy asked me, do those dogs bite? And I said, yes. I said, they'll shred you right here. If you do anything funny, I'll sick them both on you. And so everything changed. And so I know that those dogs, boy, they saved my caboose on that. I'm sure of that. But yeah, people would have guns and you'd be patting them down and they'd have it hidden someplace on their person. So there was a number of scary situations.
You almost came back home to a combat situation right here. Exactly. In our, you know, because there's, you know, people have different perspectives of fish and game, you know.
Yeah.
You know, they're there for a reason. They have a job to do. And they're pretty much taking people who are doing illicit things.
Yeah.
And, you know, the rest of us, if you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, pretty much they leave you alone. And so that's what that's why you got to be so careful when you're out there. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. Our guest is Bob Prosser. And when we come back, we'll be talking about the Igo Veterans Cemetery and our veterans who get laid to rest in the PGR and what their duties and their job is to our community.
Hi, I'm Arielle Winter. If you're anything like me, your pets are not only your best friends, they're part of your family. American Humane, which has been rescuing animals like Cleo here for more than 100 years, has life-saving tips that can make a big difference in a disaster. When disaster strikes, you want to protect your whole family, including your pets. To help keep your family safe and help our best friends in their worst times, find tips at AmericanHumane.org.
Hi, this is Brian Martin, General Manager of River Common Senior Living.
One of the most rewarding things about what I do is watching the positive transformation that often occurs when a senior moves here to our beautiful, independent retirement community. Seniors can become isolated, find it hard to eat good, healthy meals, and even just get around. I call this a failure to thrive. At River Commons, we solve those challenges. You are surrounded by friendly people with similar life experiences. Chef Shalisa and her crew provide three delicious and healthy meals daily. Activities Director Ernie always has a wide variety of things to do, from arts and crafts to outings on our 25-passenger bus. Plus, we provide utilities, cable TV, scheduled transportation, weekly housekeeping, and more. We see seniors go from survive to thrive, and that is just a wonderful thing. Call today for a tour or luncheon a tour and experience River Commons for yourself. 221-2121 or on the web river-commons.com.
Remodeled kitchen, bathroom, or backyard patio? There's a lot of choices, but only one leader, Estate Granite.
Mike Huber has such a professional attitude and a can-do work ethic that makes him a joy to work with. Mike and his crew worked to have our new kitchen finished in 5 days. We came back to a true work of art.
Hi, this is Brian Salato, broker and co-owner of the Real Estate Group. In today's competitive market, I think what's important is that the house is dialed in and turnkey. And what's important is that the kitchen has been renovated, the bathrooms have been renovated, granite, beautiful cabinetry. Those things make a significant difference.
Mike at Estate Granite has an eye for detail, an attention to perfection, and a quality build crew that are masters of their craft. Mike was there from start to finish.
Hi, this is Mike from Estate Granite. I know how important quality to a homeowner is, so give me a call at 241-STONE or come by our showroom at 4900 Mountain Lakes Boulevard or visit us at EstateGranite.com.
From the Pacific Justice Institute, this is The Legal Edge.
Democracy Prep Charter School in Las Vegas, Nevada is being sued by a senior for violating his First and 14th Amendment rights. You see, William Clark was directed to unlearn his Judeo-Christian values or suffer failing grades and no graduation.
We rely on your generous support to continue to provide justice for all. Learn more at pji.org.
I expected to be a lot easier.
I didn't know what step to take next.
I was transitioning from the military. I was a vehicle gunner.
An avionics specialist.
I missed my unit, my family.
Playing with my daughter, I'd felt like a stranger.
I didn't have a clear sense of what to do next.
And then I thought, if I'm going through this, other veterans have gone through it too, right? So I reached out, and I saw that I wasn't alone.
Go to maketheconnection.net to learn how other veterans have overcome the challenges of transitioning out of the military.
Tour behind him, and all his hopes ahead. A pride that beat with his young heart for all the things he did. As he stepped off the airplane, he stooped and kissed the ground. He traded a war on foreign soil for one in his hometown. There was no love for the soldier limping back home from the fight. That our flag was stitched with more than blue and white, but we turned.
Good morning, you're listening to Battlefield Expressions, and we've been playing some of the songs about our Vietnam veterans returning home and dealing with the social insurrection, basically at that time, for the hatred against the war that was turned against the soldiers. And we've seen that all along. We've seen it come back, the same thing with Desert Storm, and not as bad. Even with Iraq, when I first came back, we had issues with people that were the hatred that they had for our American men and women serving this nation. And you know, we're asked to do a job. We do our job to the best of our ability. 23 years of honorable service all around the world. I've seen a lot of different things, but I've never seen anybody that has that was wearing a uniform that stepped out and did something that was disgraceful for our nation. And it was most of the time, or I would say 100% of the time, it was the opposite. They were the men that I served with, the women that I served with, were doing honorable things for our nation, for the United States Navy, and for the countries where we were at, where we were serving. And so this misconception that's out there, the media takes it and they throw it and, they light it on fire, and then they get people so upset and going in the different directions than what our nation is really doing in many different times, especially our men and women who wear the uniform. And we take the heat, whether it's the heat from the enemy or the heat from the press, and then we also take the oppression from the people who listen to the press. Once again, our guest this morning is Bob Prosser. And Bob, you're finishing up your time. You're talking about being in the fish and game service. And when you got ready to retire, you're probably looking for something to do. And so we're going to talk about what it was that you chose to do here in our community.
Well, after I retired, my wife was still working, and I would give her a bad time about, could you turn the light off? You're keeping me awake here. So she gave me a little incentive. I went down and I applied for to be a private investigator, and I went to a private investigator school in Sacramento for, I think, 6 or 8 weeks, and came back and was working here locally in Redding as a private investigator, just doing workers' comp fraud. And after a while, I thought, I really don't want to do this anymore, and sneaking up on people and everything. So I went down, had a nice talk with the guy I worked for, and decided that was enough of that. And then I ran into a friend of mine was into the Patriot Guard. Well, actually, it was, what was it? The Old Guard. That's how it started off, and then it turned, and then there was some conflict with some of the members, so then they formed the Patriot Guard Riders, and then there's more conflict, because if you're not the lead dog, the scenery never changes. And then so they've gotten some more conflict. So now it's the Patriot Guard Riders and the Shasta Veterans Escort, which we have here in Redding. Well, it's actually all Northern California. And we escort fallen veterans out to the cemetery that I go and stand a flag line and honor them. We'll transport them. And we also, if they don't have enough pallbearers, we act as pallbearers, not only from the mortuary, but also out of the cemetery.
Well, I know that doing the funerals for the United States Navy, I've been out there. Every time I was out there, the Patriot Guard Riders were out there, and you stand in line. You stand on each side as the family and the casket is brought in with the service member, and you stand the line when the flag is brought in with the urn. And it's always an honor to me when I'm carrying the urn or the flag and I'm walking through the flag procession with you guys out there, that you're out there, you're holding the flag, you're saluting the honor that's there, the compassion that you guys have for all of the families and the veterans that are out there at the cemetery. And you guys are dedicated. You're there for just about almost every single service that's out there. And so, I just want to say thank you to all of you who do that, all of the Patriot Guard Riders, and for those who serve and do that in our community on a daily basis, just about.
Yeah, we don't. Well, last year we did 81 services, so we have to be requested by the family. We don't solicit, and we are a 501c3, and we survive on just donations. And we do not request a donation or even bring it up. The family has to volunteer to give us a donation. And we did 81 services last year, and the mileage was 10,214 miles that we drove last year. And this is all volunteer. We pay for all that gas and everything out of our pocket. And just the liability insurance that we have a $2 million policy. It's just under $1,800 a year. So we have to get enough donations to cover that, if nothing else. And then, if you haven't left door, we'll buy safety equipment for the guys to wear. But we've gone down to Sacramento. I think we went down there 3 or 4 times last year to bring home veterans that had died in other areas, and they flew them into Sacramento. We escorted the family and the hearse from the Sacramento airport up to wherever they were going to, whatever mortuary they were going to be stage that to have their service. And then from that location out to Igoan, and another day or two would go by, and we escort them out there. But we've and everybody handles the service differently, because we did a World War II veteran. And his wife asked us if we would carry his urn on one of our motorcycles. And I said, well, most definitely would be honored to do that. And she walks up to me as we got out to the cemetery out there, and she puts her arm, here she is. He was in his mid-late 90s, and she's probably roughly even the same age. And she walks up to me and puts her hand on my arm and says, did he say anything to you? Well, you know, it's really hard to read people to figure out what's appropriate to say to somebody, you know, have some wise comment or whatever. And I said, well, he asked me if we could go around the track one more time. And she said, oh, I just knew he'd love to have a ride, because she said that he always wanted a motorcycle, but she would never let him have one. So at least
and that was in 1940.
Yeah, he got one ride to his final resting place.
Wow, how unique is that?
Yeah.
So you have traveled all the way across the United States taking care of fallen veterans.
What was it, in 2009, riding with the Missing in America Project, MIP, we took three GIs. Isaiah Mays, he was a Medal of Honor recipient. He was a Buffalo soldier from the 1890s. And then Johnny Callahan was in the Navy in World War II. And if I remember right, the Japanese had dropped a bomb. He was a Navy, and the Japanese had dropped a bomb on his ship, and he went over and picked it up and threw it over the side before it blew up. And I'm sorry, but I can't remember. Johnny Callahan was in Sacramento, and there's a gentleman that was a combat medic in Vietnam. He lived in Cottonwood, and I cannot remember his name. But we took the three of them back to Arlington. We left Reading on May the 21st, and we interred them on May the 29th. So we traveled all the way across the United States in that period of time, and we stopped every 100 miles and got gas and took a break and everything. But I pushed the odometer back out of Harley Ultra Classic at that time, and it was 6,419 miles from my front door to Arlington and back home again. And my caboose realized how far that was too. But it was a good ride, and good. And I can't remember, but there were probably between 1,500 and 2,000 people that participated in that. Everybody didn't go all the way. Like, some folks left Reading, went to Sacramento, and came back. Then they went from Sacramento to Winnemucca, and then they would come back. So everybody, we picked up different groups and rode all the way over there. And in fact, there's a motorcycle group. They're the Buffalo Soldiers, and they all wear the Stetson hats and a real combat yellowish shirt. Their boots, they have spurs, and those real short spurs on their boots. And that even reminds me that we carried a gentleman out there, the company, I can't remember the name of the company, but they have a cart, a caisson, where they had the coffin on there. But this gentleman, he was in the Army, I think it was 1936, so he actually was a horse soldier, and he ended up...
Andy Andreessen.
What?
Andy Andreessen.
Yes.
He was the Black Horse.
Yeah. Yes, right.
Yes.
And anyway, then he ended up being in an armored unit of tanks when he retired. I think he was a master sergeant, if I remember.
Yes, he was. In fact, he was there the first day we opened up the museum out at the Reading Airport, and he sat there and shook the hands of every person that came through. Okay. We have his collection he donated to us from all of his unit crests, probably close to 1,000 unit crests of all the different ones throughout the years. And he was an amazing guy to meet him. He served World War I, World War II, and Korea. So he started at the very beginning as a horse soldier and then worked his way all the way through into Korea out of the horse soldier. But just a wonderful man. You meet so many wonderful people who have had served this nation proudly and have carried the flag and the honor with their lives, just as yourself, as our other veterans who come back from the war zone, come back from their service, and then they serve our community in an honorable way. We're coming up on a break. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. We'll be right back.
KCNR 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and online at am1460.com. Join me weekday mornings from 6 to 7 with the Sue McClain News Hour. I'll have your up-to-the-minute local news, national and international news, weather, sports, and a whole lot more. Followed by Free Fire Radio from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. From 9 to noon, be informed and laugh along with Armstrong and Getty, the conscience of the nation. From noon to 3, find your financial peace with Dave Ramsey.
from 3 to 6, don't miss constitutional expert Mark Levin. Monday through Thursday night, starting at 6 p.m., we have local shows featuring everything from the paranormal to riding routes, pop culture, and unsung heroes of our area. From 7 to 9, tune into Ben Shapiro with an expanded program that brings the issues of the day to your radio. KCNR, 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and online at am1460.com.
Get game day ready with Black Bear Diner. Their family meals to go make perfect party platters for your game day crowd. Choose a party favorite such as chicken strips or cheeseburger sliders, new for the big game. And add a platter of golden onion rings for just $10.99. Visit blackbeardiner.com to start your order. Look for Family Meals to Go. Pre-order starting Thursday, February 4th.
Black Bear Diner.
At Shasta Regional Medical Group, we're focused on the health matters that matter to you, like having a primary care doctor you trust. Our physicians put patients first. They take the time to listen to your needs and concerns, and they provide the information you need to make good decisions about your own health. At Shasta Regional Medical Group, you have an integrated network of caregivers and specialists working to serve you in a compassionate, patient-centered environment. We're conveniently located right across the street from Shasta Regional Medical Center. To make an appointment, call Shasta Regional Medical Group today at 605-4260. Or visit us online at ShastaRegionalMedicalGroup.com. Shasta Regional Medical Group. Your primary care is our primary concern.
I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Esses.
And we co-host Writing Roots.
It's a 10-minute podcast in which we, an author,
and her editor,
cover lessons we've learned about the writing process.
So whether you're an experienced storyteller or still working on that first book,
now is the time to check us out.
Writing Roots is available on iTunes, Spotify, and anywhere you find your podcasts. And don't forget to always
write selfishly.
All I ever wanted to do was fly, leave this world and live in the sky. I left the C-130 out of Fort Worth town. I go up some days, I don't want to come down. Well, I fly that plane, call the angel flight. Come on, brother, you're with me tonight. Between heaven and earth, you're never alone. On the angel flight, come on, brother, I'm taking you home. I love my family and I love this land, but tonight this flight's for another man. We do what we do cause we heard the call. Some gave a little, but he gave it all. I fly that plane, call the angel flight. And come on, brother, you're with me tonight.
Come on, brother, you're with me tonight.
Between heaven and earth, you're never alone. On the angel flight, come on, brother, I'm taking you.
Good morning. Once again, you're listening to Battlefield Expressions. Our guest is Bob Prosser. We've been talking about his Vietnam service and our service during the Vietnam era, and then also talking about his transition back home and then working with the Patriot Guard Riders, and now he's the team leader of the Patriot Guard Riders here in Shasta County, talking about bringing the brothers home and escorting the families and the veteran to their final resting place at the Igo Veteran Cemetery or any of the cemeteries where you're requested here in Northern California. And I just want to say thank you, Bob, for doing that, for leading those group of guys. I want to say thank you to all the Patriot Guard Riders who show up and volunteer their time and are there to help support the families. Whenever I've been out there doing funerals for the Navy, I've always heard positive and great things about how much the families appreciate so much you guys' attitudes and what you do for the families to give them that support. That's the final chapter in the life of that individual, and you help to make that a respectable and honorable time for the family when they're grieving. They're not out there by themselves. You're there, and you're presenting that honor. And one of the family members that we talked about, one of the veterans that you did, was Joshua Muntz. And tell us a little bit about the story on that. We've got about 8 minutes left in our time.
You know, Joshua Muntz, we met at the Gaia Hotel down off of Riverside.
Riverside Drive, yeah, Anderson.
In Anderson there, and we lined up, and there's a group from the Westboro Baptist Church back in Kansas that they protest military funerals, and I'm not sure exactly why, but they showed up down there to protest this young hero's death and our escort out there. And the CHP came over, and Highway Patrol, they came over and ran them off because they didn't have a permit to protest and block the road the way they were trying to do. And I was just appalled at what these people were doing. But then there also, there's a bench down at Anderson County Park there, Anderson City Park, that was put together by Jeff Nelson was running our Patriot Guard at the time, and he is right at the forefront of getting the funds and everything, having that bench built in honor of Joshua Muntz.
And incidentally, Joshua Muntz served in Iraq twice. And so he served at the beginning of the war, and then he served also in 2006 and 7 as a private contractor. But he was a former Marine. He was at the Marine Corps when we crossed the border going into Iraq. And what is so interesting is the fact that he was killed in southern Iraq. They were taken. They had stopped their convoy. They had at a checkpoint that they thought was a legitimate Iraqi checkpoint. It turned out to be insurgents, and he was captured. They had killed the other men that were in the services that where they were at, because they weren't Blackwater, but they were another private security group that was there. And he was captured, and then while he was captured, I was in Iraq at that time. I was in Fallujah, Iraq, running the convoys. And because of how that took place with the false police and everything else, we had to change all of our tactical training procedures while we were there in Fallujah, because now we never stopped at an Iraqi checkpoint. We blew through every single checkpoint wherever there was, or usually there was not a checkpoint where we were at. But we knew that those were out there. So the independent convoys, the smaller convoys at that time, were now embedded into my convoy team. So now also immediately, instead of taking 75 semi-trucks, now I've got 105 because now I'm taking 20 extra vehicles that can't travel on their own. Sure. So that changed the whole venue of how we did convoys in Iraq when Joshua Muntz was captured. And then after he had lost his life, he gave his life for our country. I was actually there that day. When the service was there, I actually presented the flag to the family, the Muntz family. And I just thought, how ironic is that we served in the same country 12,000 miles away in Iraq, and then to come home and him to be laid to rest in Anderson right there at the Igo Veterans Cemetery, and then for me to be the individual to present the flag to the family. It's so ironic and so interesting to be so separated and yet so close in a situation like that. And another way to honor a veteran who gave his life.
Yes, that was a very good escort that we provided. It was our honor to do that for him. And I've had people ask me, you know, about the different escorts, and we just did one the other day for a young man. He was 5 years old. His name is Lim Sammons. He passed away at 5 years old from brain cancer, And we escorted him and his family from Allen and Dahl in Anderson to Allen and Dahl in Palo Cedro. And the Highway Patrol, Redding PD, Shasta County Sheriff, Anderson PD, CDF, actually Cal Fire showed up. And they've assisted with this escort. And I did not get a count on all the vehicles that were there, but it probably was 75, maybe 80, 90 vehicles that participated in that to honor this young man. And one of our escorts, Fred Loveland, has a 1934 Ford that he's decorated up as has all the flags on it.
And beautiful.
Painting. Yeah, so he had a big eagle on the roof and everything. Fred has done this out of his own pocket. He doesn't solicit or has received any extra money, so he just gradually keeps putting this car together and doing more and more things to it. It's a labor of love.
So when you're out there, usually the traffic, you usually don't have any problem with the traffic. Traffic usually stands by and watches. And,
well, we are authorized through the state of California to block the intersections. We cannot run a red light. We wait for the light to turn green. Then we send blockers out and they hold the intersection. So, and we wait till the very last vehicle goes through until we exit the intersection. And almost everybody is very respectful because we're doing this on, Placer Street, Clear Creek Road, Gas Point Road are like three major thoroughfares. And the oncoming traffic is so respectful that the majority of them pull over and stop just to show honor and respect to the fallen veteran and the family.
Now, when you're riding, you have usually wear the green vest, and you usually have flags flying from your motorcycles.
We have flags flying. We have our emergency flashers on. We run high beam on our vehicles. And we have a flashing light, a strobe light that's on a pole above your head so that it flashes, 360 degrees. So oncoming traffic, side traffic, we'll see it. But say we've done this enough times that people are recognizing who we are. Not everybody pulls over, but quite a number of people pull over just to show honor and respect for the fallen veteran.
I know a lot of times when they see you, they're just standing alongside the road and they've got a salute while you by.
I forget the veteran's name, but we went out Placer Street and Grant School out there by Swayze Drive there, the principal had the whole entire school was lining the fence with the American flags. And they had banners that they had made and put embedded into the fence there.
I'm trying to remember the veteran because it was pretty critical here in our community at that time.
Yeah, see, it's been a couple of years ago now. I just can't remember his name. But say we are, as through the Patriot Guard and the Shasta Veterans Escort, we only escort veterans when the family requests us. We don't we don't go out and request,
Well, I know that, but there's probably close to 8,000 interred out there at the Iago Veterans Cemetery now. I mean, it's just the numbers grow and grow every single day.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And so, once again, we're coming up on the end of our time. Excuse me, Bob. Is there anything else that you'd like to say out to the folks there? Is there anything you'd like to say to other fellow Vietnam veterans while we're talking about the commemoration of the Vietnam War?
Well, thank you very much for your service. I know I spent my 3 years in Germany from 64 to 67. But you guys, my hat's off to every one of you. And if there's anything you need help with, be more than happy to help you out. And if you're on a ride with the Patriot Guard riders, you do not need a motorcycle. You can drive a car. And I'll even let you ride on the back of my Harley three-wheeler if you want to go for a ride. And see, there's no dues. There's no expense. It's all volunteer.
Well, once again, I want to say thank you, Bob, for being here. Welcome home, and thank you for your service to our nation, and along with all the other Vietnam veterans as we continue to commemorate the memory and the service of those who served during Vietnam, men and women who wore the uniform from all the different branches of the service. Thank you for your Patriot Guard service, and thank you for continuing to honor our veterans here in our community through the Veterans Cemetery and through all the other veterans organizations that you're involved with. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. We'll talk to you next time.